Good morning, good morning, good morning. And thank you for joining us on another episode of Face to Face Talk Show. We have a very interesting show for you today. But before we get started, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go ahead and share this show because friends don't let friends miss out on Face to Face Talk Show. So today we have a very special guest who has been unable to join us for a couple of weeks. He's back with us today. So I'm excited to have him. Good morning, Lamont. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm excited to have you. And you are one of the co-founders of the Lens app, correct?
Correct.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Lens app?
Okay, well, me and my wife, Katrina, did. We developed an app that will allow subscribers to rate and report their interaction with police officers. The app is done in phase one, so you can go to the iOS store. Google's holding up our process a little bit, but you can download it right now on iOS. We're trying to do a beta testing phase and just get a whole bunch of information. And then we're working on phase two. I'm actually working on a partnership with a university. I'm not going to drop their name yet. They're working on a grant for me to see if they can help push this along and also kind of sort of test phase it at the school too. So that's coming down the pike too. I'm just waiting for a final okay from that. And we're building a community, a social networking community that's going to be the phase two piece that allow people to interact within their own community, see what's going on, and just share information and see what's going on with the police officers. So that's where we're trying to go with it.
Yes, we want to talk a little bit about that this morning. Good morning to our co-host, Paul Foss. How are you, Paul?
I am outstanding, as you know. I'm always good.
Yes, you're not in your office. See, we used to be able to pull the little messages from each other. I used to have my bookcase with all the little messages. You'd be sitting in your office, little messages. All the messages are gone now. I guess we just have to verbalize them.
We just have to verbalize. I'm in a new office. I'm in my home office.
So why are you here today, Paul? Why are you so passionate about face-to-face talk show?
I'm passionate because I get to talk to people and meet people that I wouldn't normally, connect with, learn about issues that I have admittedly refused to look at, and have conversations, be able to ask questions in a on tough topics. And I often get to ask the questions that I hear other people talk about in whispers, but are too afraid to talk about and ask in public. So I enjoy it. I enjoy being able to have these conversations and learn, and hopefully get others to think the same way. So that's why I always come on.
Okay. Now, Lamont's been here on several occasions. We've talked to him. We've learned about the Lens app. We shared the stage with him and his lovely wife. Now, Paul, for you, what are some of the things that you have learned about the Lens app?
Well, first of all, when I heard about it, I thought it was a great idea, mainly because, when they first started talking about it, my immediate reaction was, oh no, anti-police, right? That, okay, police are bad and we got to watch them. So that was my knee jerk because I didn't listen. I didn't, I came in and judged the book by its cover, so to speak, without listening. But then when it was explained to me, it's not pro-police, it's not anti-police, it's just information. Just like the rating system on eBay isn't pro-buyer, pro-seller, it is what it is. It allows people in every interaction we have now in today's day and age, whether it be Uber, eBay, people get to rate their interactions with people, Yelp reviews, even Google reviews. We have a system in place where people can rate their interactions with other businesses or other people for others to see. And there are checks and balances. So people just can't go, I can't go rate a business I've never been to. I mean, it happens, but there are some checks and balances. So when I learned about the concept of, hey, we have all of this media bias out there about interactions with police, but often it's he said, she said, and there's no spot to go talk about your interaction with the police. And document it if you can. And it was never explained that it's a way to document bad interactions with police. It was explained to me when I listened was this is a way to document interactions with police. Those can be great interactions. So we can reward the police officers that are doing the right thing all the time. We can hopefully get rid of the really bad ones. And then there's ones that the interaction might not have been perfect, but it's not that it's a bad police officer. Maybe it's just opportunities for training. Hey, in this situation, maybe the approach would have been, but if there's no third party or independent or citizen-based review process, it's just police and obviously the protection of community and laws and citizens where there could be or could not be bias. So I think the concept is great. I think people need to use it the right way. And, you know, we always see too often people go to a restaurant, if they had a bad experience, they'll tell everybody or they'll yell at the manager or the waiter. But if they have a great experience, they won't also go tell the manager or the waiter and other people. So I think when it comes out, I think it's, we have an obligation to use it for all because we want to elevate the police officers that are doing a good job. We want to recognize them. We want to show other people that interactions can happen without, you know, in fact, I watched about 10 interactions this morning on YouTube of police interactions. And there were some where the police officers were awesome. And again, I'm very pro police officer. And there were others where I said, I don't know why that escalated. And I don't know why it started that way. So I think the concept is awesome. I'm excited to get, you know, to have it out there. I want to use it myself, except I rarely run into interaction with police officers. But I do occasionally, you know, being a first responder myself, I do watch police officers and see them in action. So I'm excited to see, you know, what happens. And I think that everyone needs to get behind it. It's the first of a kind I've heard. And look, I'm not part of it. Lamont's on the show and it's his. It's not going to be perfect day one. What it's going to take is people to use it. Because with data and use and acceptance, then it could be, okay, we didn't think about that. Okay, you know, but I'm excited.
You sound excited. Lamont, when you hear Paul say that, what are your thoughts?
I mean, it warms my heart because at first we were a little nervous that, like he said, people would think that we were coming after police. But at the end of the day, being somebody that has always lived in and worked in urban areas, you understand that there needs to be a relationship between the people that are policing that community. And then once you have a relationship, you can start seeing other stuff curtail. Like you have crazy situations where 200 people see somebody get shot and nobody has any information. Reason being, because they've seen too many instances where police officers use that stuff and it causes them problems, and that's not the way it's supposed to work. So once you repair one relationship, I feel like you'll be able to repair all of them, and then you'll have little kids like they used to be when we were growing up. We never had problems talking to police officers. Little kids were never seen as snitches, informants. They were little kids doing what they were taught to do. And the times has turned because policing has been so bad. In a lot of instances, little kids don't even like them no more. They see that's a bad man now, and it can't be like that. You can't do your job when the most innocent people on the planet think you're a bad person just because of what they've heard or what they've seen historically. And I just want to try to bridge that gap and repair some of that stuff, because crime rates will never drop if people can't do their jobs and people aren't comfortable giving people information to do their jobs.
Right. I agree. I think it's, you know, it's something about, you could see a person, like everything about them, interact with them in a supermarket, in a restaurant, in a store, at a ball game, great person, but they put on a uniform and the badge, and there shouldn't be a visceral response of dislike or hatred. You know nothing about that uniform and badge. You know, maybe interactions with other police officers, or maybe that one. So I think the concept of showing in an open forum interactions, and what I don't like is the groups out there doing it for the sole purpose of provoking police officers. You know, walking around with, you know, 7 long guns and running through parks where there's kids, where they legally have a right to, but for the sole purpose of you know, catching police officers getting upset. Let's have just regular interactions the way they're supposed to be. And unfortunately, in every instance, when people know they're being watched and there's a rating system, so to speak, you know, you think a little bit more. Look, I want to see the app change and ultimately include politicians, you know, because
and school a lot teachers
of teach and a lot social of service workers, you know, with our local politicians. And it'd be nice to say, hey, I had a question about my local community when I reached out. Grab the phone, return the call right away, listen to my concern, follow up with me, versus I can't get one of my politicians to ever respond unless they're running for office and want my vote. So I think the concept could be expanded out to a lot of applications where we need, you know, the ability in a centralized place. I shouldn't need to dive all over the place to understand, okay, Lamont's running for office. You know, if somebody wants to visit my company, they very quickly look at my Google reviews, my Facebook reviews, maybe my Yelp group in one spot. And I can't take down the bad ones. Maybe I can comment on them. But in these worlds of politicians, teachers, police officers, there isn't one spot where I go, okay, Lamont's running for office. Oh, look at that. The last time he ran, 100 people in the community had wonderful dealings with him. And he was responsive and he cared. It wasn't just about the vote. So I think that this can lead to other spots where we can openly, honestly, you know, have checks and balances and report how we feel. And again, just because I report something doesn't make it true. It's one side. And as long as the other side could then go in and respond and post up their own information, then it's fair and reasonable. And I think it can grow from there.
Yes.
And I'm going to jump on your politician thing real quick, Paul, because when you said it to us before and I told you about my experience, now I'm name dropping. I don't feel like being nice now. So I'm here in Delaware. And I contacted Senator Coons' office with some information, and I got a response from them saying, leave me alone, don't email me no more. And no, I did not vote for him in a primary, and I will not put his name on the ballot on election day because of that. And if I had a way to rate him, I would light him up every day, all day.
Right, that there should be a system in place where if I reach out to my politician and they say to me, don't call me, don't email me, like, That's it. That we elected officials, and I've been told not to call you, email you. People need to know that, and no one's going to find that in, you know, their general research when they're looking at the next elections. It's, you know, I can run today and say, I'm going to do this, then get elected and do none of it. But unless there's a spot where people could talk about that. So I think that there's applications in all areas. You know, we've seen it with businesses across the board. With Yelp and Google reviews and Facebook. Now, there's been some abuse and it's not a perfect system, especially when it's a for-profit thing like Yelp, where, you know, all of a sudden 25 of your good reviews disappear, but your bad reviews stay up. You know, and I ran into that situation and a lot have. So, because they want to sell me other stuff. So I don't like that, but I do like the ability for individuals can give their opinion and others can say, here's my opinion. And it's not just my opinion. Here's the facts. Here's the video. Here's the communication. Here's the text dialogue. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. And again, be very clear, very pro police. You know, I'm a fan of police officers. I think what they do is a dangerous job, but they run towards me. Again, I have a different experience from based on growing up, and we've talked about this before. I've never talked to my teenager about, hey, you got to be really careful if you get pulled over. I've never had to have that conversation. I've told my son, if you get pulled over, you know, be respectful. But I don't have any fear ever of my son getting pulled over and having a gun drawn on him or being dragged out of a car being shot. I have a fear of him just being a punk teenager. So I've said, hey, if you get pulled over, just be respectful. And, you know, whatever. So, again, I come from it a different angle. But as someone who's very pro-police, I still think this is anybody who's pro-police that, like me, that knows that the lion's share of police officers do a great job shouldn't be afraid of an accountability act.
Yes.
Should only be afraid if you think it's going to expose stuff you shouldn't be doing. If you're doing your job right.
We talk to police officers about it. And, like, since we talked the last time, I have a buddy. He's been on the police force in Baltimore for 25, 26 years. He's a detective now. When I told him about it, he pulled it up, he looked at it, and we spoke at length. And then he left the office and we talked further. And he said, I'm gonna tell you. He said, I personally understand about bad police officers. He said, I had an incident where, now mind you, this guy is a third degree black belt. He's sliced up, chiseled, like he doesn't eat regular food. He can handle his anywhere you put him. He said he's had instances where he's on a call with officers, and when they realize he's with them, they turn into Billy Badass. And he's like, there was a situation where the guy might have been, the cop was maybe 5'9", 105 pounds. He sees he got Bruce Lee with him, so he walks up to a 6'5", almost 330-pound person and start trying to manhandle him and throw him down on the ground. No reason for it. His brother steps in, which causes my Bruce Lee homie to have to step in. But what he did, he didn't put his hands on nobody. He stepped in, removed his partner, handled that situation between those two guys because he knew him. And then he took his partner to the car and dug him a new asshole. He's like, you're not going to get me a bad name out here because I can handle myself no matter where you put me. He's like, don't get your bare muscles because you see me behind you. And he loves it too. He's like, yes, we need to be rated. We need to be reported. And we need to be held accountable because I can do an 8-hour shift and not get checked on by a superior and not come in and have nothing in my notes but my tickets or any arrests. He's like, so we do have that ability to do what we want to and get away with it. And bad police officers take that too far.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you, like, you know, my daughter who's 16 now was telling me about an incident where she was at a friend's house. 16 years old, they're minors, parents were home, and there were some kids that were drinking at the house, and my daughter was not, so she tells me. And some girl had drank too much, wasn't feeling well, so they called for an ambulance, you know, to check, and the state police showed up. And you know, my daughter didn't bring alcohol, didn't serve alcohol, wasn't caught drinking alcohol, but the state police officers in my community were yelling at her. You know, she's a minor, you know, and they were aggressive where they're saying, yeah, you know what happened. My daughter's like, I can't help you. They're like, yes, you can. And they were just very aggressive towards my daughter. Like, and my daughter, again, a super good, great student, no problems with schools, no problem with the law. She now, in this microcosm, again, white, nice community, you know, I don't have these issues. We've talked about it 5 or 6 times. So one incident with my, you know, white daughter in a very safe community, you know, we've grown up without racism or bad issues. And my daughter has brought this up to me 5 times that this police officer was like bullying her and yelling at her and aggressive. She's like, they were outside drinking. I don't know what happened. She just happened to be there. And he decided to pursue and pursue and pursue and get aggressive with her. I can only imagine if that 10 more interactions where it's more aggressive and maybe there's a hand on a gun or physical. My daughter in one interaction now has a different view of police officers for no reason. And it upset me. First of all, she's a minor. They should have called me. If my daughter was at a party and the police officer were called and there was an issue, call me. Don't be aggressive with my daughter because she doesn't know. So I would love, you know, if my daughter doesn't know, but to fill out that form and say, there was just no reason to treat my daughter disrespectfully or aggressively. She's a child, and you know, so I can see how that compounds when you have people that have worse interactions.
Absolutely. But one of the things that stood out to me, Paul, and why I like the Lens app is because it reminds me of a conversation we were having a few weeks ago when we were discussing the whole Black girl attitude and how we're perceived, and then how someone may say something and may not necessarily be the way they intended it. So maybe, you know, and I'm just throwing this out there, not saying it's true, but maybe the perception was that he was being aggressive. But how do we find out about that perception? That's when the Lens app comes into play, because one person can say this officer is overly aggressive and everybody's like, nah, she's just a girl. She's just sensitive. You know what I mean? You know, maybe she's not, Paul doesn't yell. Her dad doesn't yell. Maybe she's not used to people raising their voice. But then when you have another person or 4 more people that says Officer Bob is way too aggressive, then it makes it easier to hold people accountable.
Right. And then the state police, who, again, I like, and I've had them at my house for other situations, can have a talk and say, hey, when you're interacting with high school kids, maybe you want to tone it down a little bit. I mean, here was a situation where a kid was drinking and had too much. If you come in aggressive and scare people, what happens? Kids don't call.
They escalate.
So maybe the kids don't call the cops next time. And maybe there's an alcohol overdose, maybe a drug overdose, maybe a fight. And the kids say, I'm not calling. They scared me. They yelled at me. And again, I know it sounds silly, maybe to other people who are worried about getting shot, but it doesn't matter. For me, that's serious stuff. So I love the concept that
But Paul, I don't think it sounds silly. And I don't think that any one situation minimizes another situation in any form or fashion, because this is something that your daughter experienced. So it's something that is valid. It's her valid experience. So again, I think it's about looking at patterns, how we are overall. So is this how this police officer interacts in general? If there is, then most likely there have been complaints. Maybe there are complaints in this file. What are your thoughts, Lamont?
I think, for one, to go back to what Paul was saying, because everybody views things differently, and that's why you put 12 people on a jury, that's why you have 24 people on a grand jury. You want to try to let people look through their own lens, hence the reason why we kind of sort of picked the name, because people view things differently based on their personal experiences. And I even sit around, I'll look at videos of a lot of these police shootings, trying to understand why such and such may have happened, and look at other situations where that didn't lead that way. And what it all comes down to is diversity and training. When you don't understand how someone is in their particular area, and they don't understand how you are in your area, and you bring your stuff to theirs and try to inflict authoritativeness on them, there's always going to be a confusion. You can't approach everybody raising your voice, regardless of what type of uniform you have on, because people are going to meet you there. In urban areas, we have to be harder because we're in an environment where being soft will get you tested every day. So if you approach a situation like that just because people are loud and you're not knowing the premise around their noise, you go in there wrong. And like we said before, they could be arguing about who's better, Kobe or Michael. And Paul can tell you, follow any of my feeds on Facebook, that goes on all day long. And this is people we know for 30 years. You might see a response, motherfucker, you don't know what you're talking about. Shut up, man, punk it. But nobody means any harm by it.
Right.
But a cop walk up hearing that, now there's a reason to raise up in their opinion. You approach that same situation. Hey, fellas, we got a noise complaint. Can you just keep it down? Done deal. My bad, officer. You go away. They go away. You roll up huffing and puffing, being authoritative about a situation where it's not called for. Now, that person's lens and your lens ain't saying the same thing. And then you have a conflict. You don't meet conflict with aggression. You meet conflict with regression. Once you aggress, there's no conflict no more. That's now a battle, and you have to make it a final situation. And everybody knows in the world of behavior, you don't raise your voice at an escalated, out of control kid. You start talking lower, they stop screaming because now they want to hear what you're saying. People were nosy. Try it in your relationship, Paul. When your wife starts talking loud, you start talking low and watch what happens.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And unfortunately, it goes back to what I often say. It's about ego and having a win and be right. And if I'm the big tough guy that, we see it all the time, that two people can argue and it can get really heated. And at some point, if it keeps getting heated, the bigger, stronger guy says, I'm gonna kick your, like, that doesn't make you right. Like, you can kick my ass, doesn't mean that you're on the right side of the argument. Like, it just means that you might've been a better fighter than me. But we see that in conflict, that it goes up and up and up and up and up and up. And sometimes, and de-escalation skills are what people need to be taught in communication, relationships, police interaction, all of it, bouncing in a bar, de-escalation skills. So
Why I say I went through all of that. And that's why I also believe correctional officers would make better police officers because they have to de-escalate because they're in a unit with 120 people by themselves. You huff and puff, you get your ass beat and you don't make it home. They know how to de-escalate and they know how to handle all of those different personalities. So if you take, and they can't get picked, they're inmates. You don't get to pick your inmates. So just like a cop, you deal with who comes. So you have to be trained on how to deal with everybody. So taking away sensitivity training and diversity training was not a good move because you still have those people who don't know what the other people are like. And yeah, go work with them. You've seen five black people in your life. Now go work in a 90% black city. See how that works out for you.
Right. Also, I think if I decide to be a police officer now, obviously probably too old to get on the job, and I come through and they say, okay, Paul, you're going to be assigned to, you know, Detroit, South Central LA, parts of Illinois, without the culture training, diversity, I walk into a situation that I think is aggressive, or as we talked about in the last show, somebody dressed a certain way, calling each other certain, that's aggressive to me. That's scary to me when there's nothing aggressive or scary about it at all. It's the way people banter. Like if you see my friends and I banter, people look at us like we hate each other. I'm like, no, this is the way we just bust each other. But I know that in my world, I don't know that in Lamont's world. I don't know the way, like, you know, guys talk to each other or what situations are norm. So, you know, again, I'm not, I'll say it over and over again, very pro-police, but I'm also pro-gun. I think we need to have better gun laws. You know, I'm pro-police. I think we can have better training. I think there are components of, you know, not just weapons in the law, but community, diversity. How do people communicate? What's normal? What, you know, you do it if you go overseas on business. You know, you learn what hand signals aren't right, when to sit down, how to take a business card properly. So it's taught to business owners who travel the world because there's different cultures, different acceptable behaviors. So I think that that's all really important. Again, I haven't experienced it much because of where I come from. I've had, you know, the few interactions I've had with police is because I was, you know, a punk kid at a party and thought, you know, I was invincible and they showed up at my party. And, you know, I'm, you know, back when I was younger, oh yeah, you can't do anything to me. You know, my dad is like one of those, you know, my dad was nothing.
Yes. Yes. But one thing that you said was key, Paul, that I thought was so key is this whole escalation aspect, because you also mentioned watching these police videos and watching the different videos. And I don't post them, I don't share them, but I love to watch them and pick them apart. And one of the things that I usually notice is that point where you go, okay, you could have de-escalated that situation, but it's like the ego jumps in. I watched this one video. I don't know if you saw it. It was maybe a month or so ago. Is this female police officer who pulled this young man over in front of his parents' house, and the mom came out. You're nodding your head like, and
I posted it.
I saw it.
Yes. Okay, but the whole time, and so then the mom filed this complaint against the police officer. And they ruled that the police officer hadn't done anything wrong. She was well within her white rights to behave the way she did. But I'm watching this video, and I believe this video from memory was about 12 minutes. It was like a 12 to 20 minute interaction. And the mom's outside saying repeatedly, like, just give him the ticket already. Just give him the ticket. And it was this whole power struggle where she was like, just holding on to the ticket because she didn't feel safe. And she had to wait for backup because they were outside. And I'm like, just give him the ticket already.
And she never took her hand off her gun.
Yes.
Right. The issue is that, unfortunately, look, there's a time and a place where being in a job like police or firefighters or thing or military, you have to have your team's back, right? But we need to be able to break through that thin blue line, thin red line, the military line. You know, too often, and I watch a lot of police videos. Now, usually the ones that are posted are not the greatest ones, you know. Yeah, occasionally you'll see one where a police officer pulled up and decided to shoot hoops with guys, and not a lot of people post those because, you know, we like the aggressive ones. But you might have one officer being aggressive, and from the videos that gets posted, other officers arrive, and you rarely see an officer go to the officer and say, let's tone down, because it's a culture of we protect each other. You don't go against, you know, the blue line. Like I've said before, I am a pro cop, but I think we talk about, you know, racist police or bad incidents like George Floyd or any others. You can't march that out and you can't legislate that out. You can make all the laws you want. No weapons, no mace, no guns, no anything. If you have bad guys who are bad, they're going to find a way to be bad. What we have to break through is that blue line where, yes, I understand we have to protect each other's backs because it's life or death. But there's a point where if somebody's crossing that line or being inappropriate, you can't be afraid to say, hey, let's pause for a second. Maybe we can back up. Because I think a lot of police officers, especially the young ones, might be afraid that that's going to affect their career, that they might not have their back later on. So we have this line. It's an important line to save police officers' lives, but there's a spot where you have to say, no, that's not what this line is for. And you don't have to do it. I could pull Lamont aside and say, hey, man, let's chill out a bit. Like, this guy's good. Like, we have to know when it's okay. But we can't just, you see too many officers that, and you could maybe, if you look at some of their faces, you could see that they want to do something, that they want to de-escalate, they want to say something, but the culture doesn't allow it.
Hey, Paul, let me stop you right there real quick. Back to working on the inside. We actually had a code where if somebody was presenting too aggressive, somebody would walk up to them and say, you got a phone call. They respond one time and say, take a message. You got a phone call. We push you out the way. We take over the interaction. If you come back after that, it was 10 days in the street or you lost your job. So we would tap each other out. You're doing too much. I was in a situation where one of my coworkers, I saw it. He was getting ready to break that arm. And I tapped him right on out. He didn't let go. I put my arm in his arm that he had on the hold and release it, or I'm writing you up. Gone.
Saved
the arm.
What's wrong with that?
Didn't go any further than that, but nobody's willing to step up. And even in the situation with George Floyd, twice, the guy, I can't remember his name, the young black guy that had just started. Should we roll him over? No, he's good.
You're staying right here.
I don't think he's breathing. No, he's good. Now, that guy, considering that was his superior and training officer, he told you twice, no, I don't even think they should have locked him up. I think he should have got up, been able to go home, and no charges filed on him, because twice on tape, he tried to end that situation.
Yeah, I spoke to a lot of police officers about that, and they said, when you're a rookie, especially one guy 2 days on the job a week, you don't even look at a 20-year vet the wrong way. You don't even, it's almost like a celebrity. You don't make eye contact. So that's the culture that has to change. I don't care if I'm on the job 4 minutes. If I see something that's dangerous, crosses a line, there should be no fear of me saying, hey, let's back up a second. I'm not saying, draw your gun and shoot your fellow police officer. There's a lot of degrees. It could be like, hey, man, because sometimes, look, police officers are human too. They're in life and death situation. Sometimes their aggression gets up. Regardless of what you want to say about training, somebody hits the wrong button, pushes you, curses you. And sometimes your emotions get up and you're not thinking right. It's happened to me before. It's happened to all of us before. That's why you have other people there to say, you're not thinking clear. You're excited. Hey, we got this. Let us step in and handle this for you. And I think we need to see more of that. I want to see more of that, because I think that that gets people to say, okay, I'm in a safe environment. Because look, you've seen bouncers. Their job's not to beat people up. Their job is to break it up and get it out of the bar. But I've seen dozens and dozens of videos of the bouncers going outside and throwing hands. That's not their job, but hey, they're humans. They're tough guys. They've been challenged. Their ego, there's girls watching. And now they're brawling in the street, which can cause you to lose your restaurant, your job, maybe go to jail. So I think we need to have that kind of cooler heads prevail out.
I must be a unicorn, Paul. I must be a unicorn, because every situation you just described, I have worked in. I was a bouncer for a very long time. I've been inside correctional institutions. I've done behavior therapy in all those instances, even in psychiatric hospitals. And in all those instances, you're dealing with emotions, you're dealing with attitudes, you're dealing with disorders, and you're dealing with extreme behaviors. I've been spit on, I've been swung at, and one thing I was never allowed to do there's not a person on this planet walking since I was 16 years old that can say I hit them with a closed fist. I've body slammed the shit out of people. I've used some nice little restraint techniques, some takedowns, but I have never thrown a punch, even disarmed a schizophrenic with a shank without throwing a punch. So when I see them shooting people and beating people with sticks, I consider that punk assness and poor training. I don't need a weapon to take a weapon from somebody. There's techniques for that. I don't need to throw a punch to stop a punch. There's techniques for that. And you're talking 8-9 years of correctional situations. And mind you, anybody to tell you, when you work with juveniles, they are the worst because they don't care. They know they're not going to big boy jail. So they wild out. So they're always testing you. They're always throwing punches. So I didn't hit nobody in Loudoun County, Virginia. I ain't hit nobody in Maryland. I ain't hit nobody in Harrisburg. I ain't hit nobody in Delaware because you don't have to. Grab them, take them to the ground, ball them up real quick. Once they stop moving, you release.
It's funny.
I hear you, Lamont, but I also feel, Lamont, that that is a reflection on you as a person. It's a reflection on your personality because you have such a big heart. And what happens, again, what I've seen in a lot of these videos and a lot of these instances is the ego comes into play. It's personal now at this point. So it's not just this little kid or this schizophrenic with a shank who's trying to attack me. It's like, oh, you want to do something to me? You're trying to attack me? As opposed to this person experiencing whatever it is that this person is experiencing. So you have the ability, maybe being a unicorn, to look past all of that.
No, I don't think it's a unicorn. I think it's about ego and understanding who you are. Look, I worked the door of a bar for about a year. I wasn't the bouncer. I was the door guy. I had a gigantic human being behind me that was really the safety. But if you watch, you could see a fight brewing minutes before it starts. And the reality is most guys didn't go out to a bar at night, most, to get in a fight. They went to drink with their buddies, to meet the ladies, whatever. So when you see it, you can come in with aggression or you can come in with, hey guys, everything cool? Come on. You guys want to hang out and drink? Hey, give him a beer, give him a beer. Are we good? And 99% of the time, they just want an out. They're just trying to protect. Somebody bumped in them. Somebody looked at them cross-eyed. And they're trying to protect themselves for their friends or the girls they're with so their ego's protected. They don't really want to brawl. In fact, you see guys get the loudest when the bouncers get in the middle and they know the fight isn't going to happen. So I made sure when I worked the door, I talked to everybody before they came in. Like, I didn't set the environment that this was about. Hey, guys, have a good time tonight. No trouble, guys. Hey, you got a problem, just come find me before. Like, and in the 1 year I worked, I had one fight, one punch, two friends, one punch the other. And that was it. Because I think if you set the expectations and you talk to people and you give people an out, and the out is they don't have to prove anything to anybody, okay? Because most people are protecting that. They want to look something to someone else. It's not about them. And I think if you give them that out with communication and de-escalating talk, they'll take the out. If you come in hard and everybody rallies up, then everybody rallies up because it's, you know, it's just human psychology. I got to protect, you know. So I never had a problem.
Yeah. And when you deal with behaviors, like let's say you're acting out and six of us come in, only one person is allowed to talk. Because when you hear all those voices, you can't focus on one. It intensifies your agitation. No matter how many people show up, if only one person is talking and everybody's in a relaxed, hey, we're just here more supportive, you'll find a lot of times that that will save the person embarrassment and they will talk themselves out of getting, nobody wants their hands on them. Nobody wants hands on them. That's the one thing I did learn. And hands on is what makes people escalate. So if you give them an out, like you're saying, 9 times out of 10, you don't have to touch nobody. And if you're like me, I always had the personality that I don't care what state you're in. If I have a relationship with you, you can be throwing punches. I'm going to walk in front of you and talk to you the same way I talk to you any other time. And it's been crazy a lot of times, but it has worked for me so many times. I can look at a kid who's totally out of control and say, man, sit your knucklehead ass down, come over here. They laugh. come over. And people that have worked with me has tried to mimic that. You can't mimic being me because you don't have the relationship I have. You don't cuss them out, then give them a hug. You don't put them in a 1 hour restraint, then buy them lunch. That's the difference. I do it only to get through the situation. Then once I'm through the situation, it don't matter to me tomorrow. You spit on me Monday. When you come to school Tuesday, I'm going to address you as the same person you was on Monday before you spit. Now, mind you, you got your ass busted in between the spitting and Tuesday, but I'm not mad at you on Tuesday because you ain't mad at me.
And Lamont, because you showed that person that they're not a bad person, just the behavior in the moment was bad. And that's a big difference. You are not a, you're not a punk. You're not a bad person. What you did in that moment was bad. That moment is over. You are still a good person. You were a good person when you did it. You just did a bad thing at the moment. So I think that we too many label that kid's a this or this person's a this. No, they're not. They might have just had a bad moment. They made a bad decision. Now, look, there are the bad ones. And look, whether it be corrections, whether it be bouncing, whether it be this, there's social violence, which is people protecting their egos and their whatever. Look, you do have a social violence where you just have friends. You just have bad people that don't play by society's rules. And that's a different type of violence, but that is 99.9% of the people I've met in my life will never run into that. That's the violence where you bump into someone and before you even say a word, you get stabbed. Those predators are out there, but most people, fortunately, will never run into that violence. Most of the violence is about ego and protection and attitude and that stuff.
And another thing, and this will make your life so much easier if you figure this out. People act the way they act for only four reasons. No matter what behavior you display, it's only four reasons you're doing it. You're either seeking attention, you're trying to gain something tangible, you're trying to escape an uncomfortable situation, or it's a medical issue. And you can put every behavior in the world in those four categories. And when you understand that, you take the personal part out of it. You're a school teacher. You call on Johnny to read. Johnny throws the book at you. Johnny doesn't dislike you. Johnny can't read, so he did the behavior to get away from the situation. When you understand that, you'll be able to look past the person and only focus on the behavior, because the behavior is what is the issue. And you fix that by replacing it with a more useful behavior to meet that need. You get a haircut because you want people to see you. That's an attention-seeking behavior. If you're changing your appearance all the time, you're a very needy attention person and you're still seeking attention. What's going on in 45's administration? They're all doing what they're doing because they're gaining something tangible. They want to keep their jobs. They're not going to buck the system, even though they may not believe in it, because it's a tangible income that they're not guaranteed to replace once they're done. So no, it's not necessarily a bad person. It's beneficial to them. And soon as you pick that up, you see through all the mess and be like, nope, he's doing this for that. This is for that. And you can get to the meat of it and deal with the person as a person, not as a behavior.
No, we missed you the last few weeks. Lamont, I know you have a lot on your plate. We appreciate that you even share this hour with us. But one of the things that I was like, I want to hear Lamont's take on this, was the whole Trump and this COVID thing. You know, because he had the debates. 2 days later, he was diagnosed. And then about 30 hours after that, he basically decided he was cured. So I was like, you're watching all of this. And what were your thoughts?
Well, for one, I think everything that administration does is fake left, go right. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not 100% certain that he did have it. I mean, he did look a little sick, but we don't know how much makeup they put on him for his everyday appearances. But for those 2 days, he didn't look right. Mm-hmm. Now, that's one. Two, if he did have it, with the kind of money he has and the access he has, I'm sure they gave him a nice cocktail to hold him over, because you can't let the president of the United States die. We're already the biggest clowns in the world. Now everybody's laughing at us. So I'm on the fence about it. And again, it won't be the first time in history that we've been lied to about something that's going on. So I'm not sure about it. I'm not sure, but I know if it comes out of that administration for a vaccine, I ain't taking shit.
I was having the same conversation with someone the other day. I'm like, I am not taking it. And literally the only way they are going to get me to take it is to tie me down. I'm not even talking about just someone saying, ma'am, you have to, no. Y'all going to have to strap a sister down in order for me to take this vaccine. A lot of interesting conversations going on. We're down. What I'm looking for, and this is what I would love for you guys, for Lamont, for Paul, November 4th. We have a show November 4th. I want to grab some people, bring some people. I don't know what the conversation is going to be like, but I know we're going to have a great show on November 4th talking about what's happening and what's going on.
We'll both be here that day.
Yes, please. Please let Katrina know. We need her schedule for November 4th. I'm going to try to bring some more people in. I have a few people already set who said that they're going to join us. Paul, November 4th is going to be a big day.
Yeah. I don't know
about
that. It's
going to be crazy.
By the way, I don't know about that. I would like to think November 4th is going to be a big day. What I am hoping for, whoever wins, is that it's a large majority win. Whether it be Trump or Biden, I want it by 10, 15, 20%, because what scares me to death is that we get through the election and it's 1-2% and either side contests the election. And then I think we are in for trouble in our economy, in our relations. I think the cities are going to burn. I think that we need to have.
You think cities are going to burn, Paul?
Yes. I think if we have a contested election and lawsuits back and forth, then all of a sudden what happens, like we just talked about, cooler heads don't prevail. This is BS. No, this is BS. Your guy's claiming this. And the rhetoric starts going up, and then emotions get in, and then, oh my goodness, all of our militias on both sides have to take to the streets, defend what's right. That scares me. I want, if Biden wins, win by enough that the Trump administration says, I lost. And if Trump wins, the Biden administration says, we lost, and we move forward whether you like it or not.
I think the issue is, and it appears that Trump is already setting the stage to contest it and get all this stuff started up by planting the divisiveness about election fraud and trying to take rights from the places that he knows he's in danger of losing. The stand back and stand by, the watch the elections and the ballots closely. He's already setting the stage to start that and get these people wound up. And if you go on social media, you see them talking about it. Everybody's, I bet you won't be able to get no ammo. Probably, this is about the last week you'll probably be able to buy ammo for certain guns because they're buying it up in droves. Somebody posted yesterday, one of my friends wanted to buy a 9mm because he doesn't own a gun yet. It's going to be his first one. He can't even get ammo in the state he lives in because it's already gone.
People are already
preparing for that and thinking like that. And it scares me a little bit too. And I honestly think it's going to be a mess. I think it's going to look worse than Florida in 2000.
Lamont,
that was 548 votes.
That's the scariest thing to me, that friends on both sides of the aisle have talked about getting weapons. We're Americans. We're allowed to disagree. We're supposed to disagree. But when people are saying, well, I'm preparing for the apocalypse, I'm buying a weapon because I'm not sure about the outcome of an election. What does that say about us? In fact, did you see the ad in Utah that just came out? Oh my, with the Republican and Democrat made a commercial together and said, I'm so-and-so and I want your vote. The other gentleman says, I'm so-and-so and I want your vote. We could disagree. We could have opposite of views on issues. But we don't have to name call. We don't have to fight. We don't have to be divisive. I think it was the first time it's happened. Let Utah be the model. It just came out. But
yeah, they're on right now. They've been showing them all morning. They're on the air right now talking about that situation and how they got to it.
But it's okay. We can disagree on issues, but we've gotten to the point where friends of mine, I'm talking about, middle income, upper middle class, people are talking about arming themselves because of a national election for president. That's scary.
Yes.
It's history repeating itself, Paul. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I had you watch when we started talking, if you think about what happened after emancipation, that's how people looked at the polls. And if you think about the stuff, part of the disenfranchisement that was originally began because of the large numbers of Blacks that was able to vote back then. That's how they kept them from voting. That's how they took their political power when they gained it. And that's how they took over all those cities. So this is history repeating itself. And a lot of those good old boys are going to do exactly what this idiot calls them to do because it's already in them to do. Just like you said, you can't change a person's heart. So they've been this way for hundreds of years. And now they have an opportunity to be out loud about it like they've never been able to do since the David Duke mess in the 80s.
I think the key here is that you can't legislate it out of their heart. So that's why we're trying to talk and have conversations, because change starts with a conversation. If we can discuss it and we can share this information, then they might change their heart. What are we looking at? Blessed. We are blessed and highly favored. Paul, you were going to say something.
What you said is exactly right. I think the most important thing we do before the election, I think most people have made up their minds. There's some in the middle. I think they're fighting. But before the election, just go talk to one of your friends that maybe over the past 6, 8, 10 months you fought with on social media. Just reach out and say, hey, Lamont, I just want to let you know I love you. We disagree on issues, but I want to talk to you about it because I want to learn where you're coming from. But I just want you to know no matter what happens, you're still my friend. And I love you and I care about you either way, because when the election's over, we still got to live. I got to go to work. I got to sell things. I got to go to restaurants. I got to get on the bus with people. I got to this. So that's, to me, what do you do between now and the election? Do your job to bring back the divisiveness. Maybe the politicians aren't going to do it, but do your job. Take the one person you've probably had a fight with about politics, and there ain't a person out there that's going to say, I haven't had one yet. BS. Find one and just put your hand out and go, hey, let's talk. Because at the end of the day,
everybody has a vested interest, and people, and that's what we're saying today, even with my post about 50 Cent.
Yes.
Everybody votes.
I wanted to ask you about that.
On their need. But the problem I have, okay, I get it. We live in a capitalist society, and it seems to be the push in America to get as much money as you possibly can. I get it. That's what everybody wants. That's what we have the Forbes list. That's why they introduce the billionaires every year. Everybody's on a chase to become as rich as possible. The problem I have, and again, I don't know how many people actually feel like me, but the problem I have, it reaches a point where, don't you have enough? Like, can't you see what more good could be done? And that's the problem I have. I mean, I'm at the bottom, and I know I'm a blow. I'm gonna be in that category just about to get the mess taxed out of them. Guess what I'm gonna do? Pay my damn taxes. And when I ain't paying taxes, I'm gonna be investing in other people to help pull them out, because I just can't be that greedy individual. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And with people vote that way. If you're into wealth, you're gonna vote for the person that's gonna keep you the most money. If you're into social services, you're gonna vote for the people that are dealing with the social service issues. I happen to be a rarity where my range runs all the way across the board. I worked in Tyson's Corner. My client's dad was a neurosurgeon and his mom was a heart surgeon. They lived in a $5 million house in Tyson's Corner, and I was his one-on-one. When I left there, I didn't see that. I was living on Upper Marlboro Pike. Mm-hmm. I didn't see none of that. I lived in a raggedy apartment. My rent was $850, but I was in a $5 million house.
Helping them, yes.
Go the whole range, so it's different. I have different feelings about that stuff.
Yes. So real quick, I know you mentioned 50 Cent. We get that. But Ice Cube, what were your thoughts real quick before we end on Ice Cube? Because I watched what he had to say. Then I also, and I don't know if you heard about that, Paul, but Ice Cube came out with his, what was it called? I guess what he wanted for Black America. And so many people had so much to say. They're like, Cube, you're a rapper, stay out of politics. And when he started working and talking with Trump, people said, why Trump? Why not Biden? And then he appeared on CNN and said he basically reached out to everyone, and Trump's administration is the one that responded, whereas Biden's administration said, we'll get to you after the election. Did you have any thoughts on that, Lamont?
Well, I mean, me looking at Ice Cube's career and seeing the controversial person he has always been, You can convince me on the 50 Cent thing. You can convince me on some of the other people. Not Ice Cube. Ice Cube has been political his entire career. His entire career, he's addressed every issue that has affected Black America. Now, I didn't know that Biden's administration told him to wait till after the election. That was their fault. You get a conversation with who will hear you. Even if Trump took the information just trying to steal Black votes. Again, that's the Democrats' fault for dropping the ball. He had a message that he was trying to get out there. And let's be real, I'm not going to be a tongue biter now. Who has helped Black America in the White House anyway? So you're going to talk to who will listen to you. You know, me, I dislike Trump so much. Even with my Lens app situation going on, I wouldn't talk to him about it because I'd be scared he was going to fuck it up since he bankrupts everything he touches. So that's why I wouldn't talk to him. I don't like him as a person. I don't like him as a businessman. I don't like him as a politician. So I would sacrifice myself. And that could be stupid, but I have morals. I have integrity and I have value. So that's not somebody I would ever rub elbows with. But I understand what Ice Cube was doing, just like I understand Steve Harvey taking that conversation. And we know Steve Harvey don't like him a little bit. Mm-hmm. But you still talk to who's going to talk to you because they got to hear the message.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now we are coming down. We have about 2 to 3 minutes left of the show. What I love to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives, and simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. So, of course, we're going to start with you today, Lamont.
For me, for my appearance, the biggest thing I want you to take away, and I mean, I know this is an opportunity where I should be pushing and trying to sell a brand. I'm not trying to sell a brand. I'm trying to sell a reality. Until we can have conversations and hold everybody accountable and actually do what is necessary to fix what is wrong, we're all just talking in circles. And I'm not somebody who likes to waste my breath and say a lot of stuff. I only talk when I have a point to make. If I don't have a point to make, I don't say anything. And the point that needs to be made here is there's too much hate and divisiveness going on in this world right now. And if we're supposed to be harmonious and unified with our diversity, we have to have these conversations and we have to do something about what we talk about. You can't have a problem if you don't have a solution. Don't come to me and tell me you're hungry. If you don't tell me what you want to eat, you're going to stay hungry. Have a solution when you have a problem. So look past what's wrong and figure out how to make it right.
When you have a point, it is well said. So thank you for that, Lamont. Paul, what do you have for us?
I'm going to be really simple on this one. If you want to know my point and what I believe, I want you to go back. I want you to watch this. I want you to rewind back to a minute and 58 seconds when Lamont said what his closing point was. And I want you to listen again. Because I could not have said it better myself. So I don't need to say anything. I don't need to try and top that one. Listen to Lamont's, you get to me, go back and listen to Lamont's again. And I think that that's the takeaway from this episode.
I think that is wonderful. I want to thank both of you, Lamont, Paul. Thank you for joining us here today on this week's episode of Face to Face Talk Show. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. But don't just watch the show. Be a part of the show. Go to the website at AshSharifa.com. Click on Face to Face Talk Show. Join us in this conversation because we have some amazing, honest, open, authentic, vulnerable, I would say, conversations here, and we definitely want you to join us. Until next week, Wednesdays, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, everyone have a safe and a blessed week. Bye now.
Bye-bye.